Chapter 2. Stephen stands at the serving window watching as Lou Morisseau drives away.
Henry, he says, you've got to be kidding me.
Cork stands beside him watching the Escalade disappear. I don't know what was in her journal. Can you imagine Henry and Dolores Morisseau doing it like a couple of rabbits?
50 years ago, maybe, Stephen says. Did you agree to take him on as a client?
Only as a favor to Henry, just to keep that guy off his back. Cork had used his cell phone to snap a photograph of Morisseau as the man crossed the gravel lot to his Escalade, and he studies the shot now with Stephen looking over his shoulder.
The guy's soft, Stephen notes. Henry could take him in a heartbeat.
Henry is 105 years old, at least. I'd still lay odds on him. As soon as your sister gets here, I'm heading out to Crow Point to clear this up.
Cork shakes his head.
Henry the homewrecker. Imagine that.
An hour later, Jenny, Cork's oldest child, arrives in her Forester. She's brought Wabu, Cork's grandson, with her.
Cork steps from the Quonset hut and watches the two of them as they stand together for a moment, eyes to the sky. Cork sees it too, a bald eagle circling above a grove of birch trees down the shoreline of Iron Lake. The great wingspan seems to press against the spring sky as if the bird is gliding along an azure wall, searching for an opening. The eagle finally settles on a limb of the tallest tree where it perches a while, eyeing the glittering afternoon blue of the lake.
Jenny and Wabu turn, and when he sees his grandfather, the little boy cries, "Baba!" and runs across the gravel.
Cork lifts him, swings him around in the air, and Wabu squeals with delight. His real name is Aaron Small Dog O'Connor. He is 5 years old and of mixed heritage. He's become the small jewel of the O'Connor household, the delight at the center of so much of their lives. Stephen long ago gave him the nickname Wabu, which means little rabbit in the language of the Ojibwe, and it has stuck.
I'm going to help make Wabu burgers, the little boy declares after Cork has set him back on his feet. There's a menu item at Sam's place named after him, a bison burger that has become quite popular.
No, his mother says. She has a satchel over her shoulder from which she pulls a couple of books, Horton Hatches the Egg and a Sesame Street coloring book. He's going to do some reading and some coloring until his father picks him up.
He could help for a while, Cork tells her. Child labor laws, Jenny says with a stern look.
Not if he's just working for the fun of it.
Don't go, Baba, Wabu pleads.
I have to, little guy. I need to talk to Henry Malou. Cork explains to Jenny what's going on, and when she hears the story, she laughs until tears roll down her cheeks.
Cuckold? Young Wabu asks. Is that what comes out of a cuckoo clock?
Not quite, Cork says.
And in Henry's case, completely ridiculous. I'm hoping to be back in time to close tonight, but if not, don't worry about it, Jenny says. We'll make sure it's covered. It's mid-afternoon in early May, a day aromatic with spring. The scent of pine seems especially strong to Cork as he drives his expedition north along the edge of Iron Lake. Partially hidden among the trees, cabins that had been closed up much of the winter are being reopened. And soon Aurora will be alive once again with summer residents and tourists, which is good for Tamarack County, whose economy has never quite recovered from the closing of the iron mines that once meant great wealth for the region. On the other hand, it will bring an end to the blessed quiet that always descends with winter. Except for a brief few years when he was a cop on the south side of Chicago, this far north outpost has been Cork's home his entire life. And despite the mosquitoes and black flies of summer and the Arctic blasts of winter, he loves this place with his whole heart. He pulls the expedition to a stop behind a dusty pickup truck parked at the far side of the graveled county road, near the double trunk birch that marks the trail through the Superior National Forest to Crow Point. The truck belongs to Rainey, Cork's wife. He hasn't seen her in a couple of days. She's been helping Malou on Crow Point while Leah Dooling, who usually sees to the old man's needs, is gone to the Lacouturay Reservation in Wisconsin to visit family. He locks his vehicle and begins the 2-mile hike to the isolated cabin of Henry Malou. The great North Woods has awakened from a long winter slumber. Pink lady slippers, red columbines, and pale nodding chickweed dot the trail's edge like strewn jewels. Flycatchers, chickadees, mourning warblers, and blue jays flit among the pines and groves of aspens and birches, their calls like the voice of the forest itself. The smell of the still, wet, newly thawed earth gives the air a fecund, musky scent that is perfume to Cork's nose. He crosses Wine Creek, and not far beyond that enters land on the reservation of the Iron Lake Ojibwe. Soon after, he breaks from the trees and stands at the edge of a meadow. On the far side is Malou's cabin, a single-room structure built 9 decades earlier. Near it is another cabin, only a few years old, which Cork helped to build. It's where Leah Dooling sleeps. There is no electricity on Crow Point, no running water, and between the two cabins stands an outhouse. Cut wood lies stacked against the sides of both cabins, and wood smoke rises from the stovepipe that juts from each roof. Malou is sitting on a long bench made from a split log which is set against his front wall. His hair is white, and he wears a white shirt. His overalls are so faded, they're nearly the same color as the shirt. Against the dark logs of the cabin and with the bright afternoon sunlight full upon him, Malou seems to glow. Cork crosses the meadow and greets the old man. "Bonjour, Henry."
"Bonjour, Corcoran O'Connor."
Malou isn't just old. He is ancient. His face is like the shell of a map turtle, etched with so many lines there could be one for every year of his existence. Despite his great age, something young and vital remains in the glint of his dark eyes. He is a Midday, a member of the Grand Medicine Society, a healer. At the moment, he is holding a hatchet, which he is slowly sharpening with a whetstone. The old man pauses in his work.
"You came for my niece."
"That's one reason. Where is she?"
"Guiding a sweat."
The old man nods toward the west, where a thread of white smoke rises near the small sweat lodge on the shoreline of Iron Lake. He sets the hatchet and whetstone on the bench, and the two men enter his little cabin. Inside, Cork catches the aromatic scent of burned sage.
"You've smudged," he says.
"There has been much cleansing of spirits today. Smoke with me, and I will explain."
From a shelf, the old man pulls a canister and a long-stemmed pipe wrapped in beaded cloth, then leads the way back into the sunshine. Malou settles himself next to the hatchet and whetstone on the split log bench. Cork sits beside him. Malou removes the canister lid, takes a pinch of tobacco from inside, offers it to the spirits of the four directions, then fills the pipe. The sun is blazing,
and though the day began with a chill, the air has warmed significantly. Cork removes the jean jacket he's been wearing and lays it on the ground. Malou strikes a kitchen match on the surface of the bench, lights the tobacco in his pipe, and the two men spend several minutes smoking in silence. When the tobacco is burned to ash, Malou speaks.
"She came to me yesterday."
"Who?" Cork asks. Malou looks at him as if it's a ridiculous question.
"Dolores Morisot? She's here?"
"You are like a blind fox, Corcoran O'Connor. You have a swift mind, but you cannot see what is right in front of you."
Malou nods toward a pair of women's shoes placed on the ground next to the cabin door. The shoes are expensive-looking, with spiky high heels, nothing like the footwear Cork's wife Rainey would have chosen for a hike to Crow Point.
"She came yesterday with blisters on her feet from those torture devices. My niece gave her a pair of moccasins."
"How did she find you?"
"I received word that she was in Alouette asking about me. I sent Rainey to bring her. When she stood before me, it was clear that not just her feet were in misery. Her spirit was being tortured too."
"Her husband is looking for her."
In the mysterious way the old Midday knows so much, he seems to know this too.
"The woman he is looking for he will not find here."
Cork isn't sure what that means, but at the moment it doesn't matter. He spots two women approaching across the meadow. One he knows well. The other he's seen in a photograph.
When Rainey Bissonnette is near enough to be heard, she calls, "Henry told me you'd be coming."
Rainey has been Cork's wife for nearly 2 years, but still, whenever he sees her like this, her face radiant in the sun, his heart does a small leap of gladness and gratitude. Like her great uncle, Henry Malou, Rainey is Midday, a healer. And like Malou, she understands the world in a more generous way than Cork believes he ever will. Dolores Morisot doesn't look like the attractive woman in the photograph Cork was given. She wears no makeup, and her hair, soaked from the sweat and probably from her brief dip in the cold water of Iron Lake, which often follows a sweat, hangs down in wet mop strings. She looks drained and tired, and Cork thinks Malou probably insisted that she fast before the sweat. Cork stands and offers his place on the bench, which he accepts with a grateful sigh.
"I feel empty," she says. "That is a good beginning,"
Malou tells her. She looks up and seems to take Cork in fully at last.
"Who are you?"
"Cork O'Connor," Rainey says. "My husband."
"And a private investigator," Cork adds.
"Your husband came to me today, Mrs. Morisot. He's looking for you."
"He followed me?"
She says this with hope, and some life seems to come back into her eyes.
"He says he wants to talk to you."
"I can't imagine what he has to say that he hasn't said before." Rainey says, "Maybe you'll hear him differently now. He came for you, that's a start."
"Maybe."
Again, there's hope on the face of Dolores Morisot.
"When did you see him?"
"This afternoon."
Cork takes out his cell phone and finds the photograph he took of Louis Morisot. He hands the phone to Dolores, who holds it close to her face and squints.
"Who is this?" she says.
"Your husband."
She lifts her eyes to Cork, and they're filled with bewilderment.
"I've never seen this man before in my life."